Netflix has released its slate of 2021 movies. Josh Keaton has some thoughts on the Save Spectacular Spider-Man campaign, and Deadpool is officially in the MCU, all coming up on Live Action Remake. Welcome back to Live Action Remake, your source for movie news, TV news, reviews, and recommendations. My name is Diego, and I'm so thankful to have you guys back for another episode of Live Action Remake. We got a ton of news to get through. We're also doing a rewatch of Avengers Endgame right before WandaVision this Friday. I'm so pumped, you guys. Before we get into that, why don't we get to movie news, starting with some trailers. The first trailer on my list is Judas and the Black Messiah. A new trailer came out Tuesday, and it stars Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield, two amazing actors. It's about the life of Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party in 1960s Illinois. It looks fantastic. Those two are great actors. I'm sure this is going to have some Oscar buzz, perhaps. It's one of the movies coming to HBO Max this year, February 12th, 2021 in the U.S. I'm definitely going to check it out when it comes to streaming. Yeah, let me know if you guys seen the trailer. It looks fantastic. The second trailer I want to talk about, which directly goes into the movie news, is Netflix dropped a trailer for its entire slate of 2021. It has announced that they're going to be doing a movie once a week, all of 2021, at least. That is insane. Some of the movies that came up are The Harder They Fall with Jonathan Majors about African-American cowboys. That looks incredible. Thunder Force, a superhero comedy with Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer. And that one looks fine. Bruised, starring and directed by Halle Berry, her first movie as an MMA fighter. That one looks pretty cool. Lin-Manuel Miranda has his first movie he's directing, Tick, Tick, Boom, starring Andrew Garfield, which is going to be a musical. I'm particularly excited about that one, Tick, Tick, Boom. Kissing Booth 3 and To All the Boys Always and Forever, the third movies in both of their respected franchises. Very happy those are coming to an end, finally. Amy Adams' thriller movie, Woman in the Window, which has been delayed for a number of years now, or a number of months now. Escape from Spiderhead, a sci-fi thriller with Chris Hemsworth. Jennifer Garner's comedy, Yes Day. Jason Momoa's action thriller, Sweet Girl. Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, which looks pretty cool. It is a zombie apocalypse movie. Red Notice, starring The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot, which is going to be an action thriller. And Adam McKay's Don't Look Up, which we've talked about a few times on this show, with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence. That one looks particularly good, so it's interesting that they are going out of their way to show that there's going to be a bunch of movies on Netflix. I think this is completely because of the HBO Max deal, and this is their response to it. Netflix has been buying movies, and they've been doing their own movies for a while now, so they're showing that they also have a fight in the cinema streaming war now. So some of these look pretty good, I'm not going to lie. A lot of these look like Netflix films, though, so compared to HBO Max, it doesn't seem as big of a move, but it's definitely a bold one. So you can see the trailer on our page at Live Action Remake on Facebook, and let me know what you think about it. Ray Fisher's Cyborg has been written out of the Flash movie, according to The Wrap. Ray Fisher responded with a series of tweets saying this is another way for Warner Brothers to try to not get backlash on their previous PR. This is very disappointing. I really like Ray Fisher. I think he's a good cyborg, although he was not well utilized in the Justice League film. I hope that they bring him back eventually, but with everything with Walter Hamada, it doesn't seem likely. If you want to hear more thoughts about Ray Fisher and Cyborg and basically the whole story, I spoke in depth with the guys at PCR, Pop Culture Reference Podcast, just last Sunday, so go ahead and check that out. The episode is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. It was a great episode. Had a lot of fun. But we talked in depth about Ray Fisher and the Cyborg debacle, everything that's been going on recently. Karen Gillan and Dave Bautista have joined the cast of Thor: Love and Thunder. This means every Guardian, with the exception of Bradley Cooper's Rocket and Zoe Saldana's Gamora, have been confirmed for Thor: Love and Thunder. I think any day now Bradley Cooper as Rocket Raccoon is going to be confirmed. He and Thor have a great relationship, which was established in Endgame. I'm just rewatching it, which I'm going to talk about in Avengers Endgame soon. But I don't think Zoe Saldana will be in this movie. I think that's going to be saved for Guardians Volume 3. We got a first look at a new DC animated film, Justice Society World War II. It has Wonder Woman, the Jay Garrick version of The Flash, Black Canary, a couple of other big hitters. I'm not a huge fan of the animation style, but it looks cool. You can check it out on our pages at Live Action Remake on Instagram or Facebook. Kevin Feige has finally responded to the Spider-Man 3 rumors. The biggest clue is in the title of the second Doctor Strange movie. That's the biggest clue of where the Multiverse of Madness is taking us and how we're exploring that. That basically confirms that the multiverse is going to be how the Spider-Man characters are going to be involved in this movie. That's really exciting, exploring the multiverse. Speaking on the multiverse, Kevin Feige also confirmed that Deadpool 3 will not only be in the MCU, which means Deadpool will be in the world of the Avengers. That's awesome. But it will also be rated R, making it the first R-rated MCU movie. Phenomenal. I love Ryan Reynolds. I love the Deadpool franchise. I think he's going to fit very well into the MCU. He didn't really fit in the X-Men universe, so this is a great choice to keep Ryan Reynolds and keep it R-rated. Keep the same feel. Deadpool 3 still. As far as we know, that's the title. It's going to be exciting. Disney may be looking to release Black Widow with premiere access concurrently in theaters as well. Disney has since denied these rumors, but it's looking more and more likely from credible sources. I really hope they don't do this. I would prefer to see Black Widow in theaters. Keep pushing it back. I'll wait. But it seems more and more likely. They don't want movies to get stale, so it makes sense. I don't think it's fair to a character like Black Widow, who has done her time. Like, Scarlett Johansson has done the time. She's done the work. She's developed the character and through any other film that they had her in. She deserved her solo movie. If anything, it was about like 5 years too late, in my opinion, but I was still excited for it. So the fact that they're thinking about putting on Disney Plus is just a disservice to the character and Scarlett Johansson's work. Morbius has also been delayed once again until October 8th, 2021. I really hope Morbius goes the route of New Mutants, where it just keeps getting pushed back comedically to the point where even when it does come out, no one cares at this point. I don't think Morbius was a good idea. I don't think Jared Leto was a good casting of the character. I don't think that character can carry a franchise, and I don't think Jared Leto can do it either. So Nick Jonas is in talks to play Frankie Valli in a streaming service version of the Tony Award-winning musical Jersey Boys. It's currently being shopped around to different streaming sites. This is awesome. I'm glad that the musicals onto streaming service wars are going to happen soon, I guess. Starting with Hamilton, of course, Disney Plus destroyed with that movie. The fact that they're doing Jersey Boys is awesome, and I love Nick Jonas. I think he's got a great voice, and I think he's a good actor, so I'm really happy to see him doing more work. Rise of the TMNT, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, has a synopsis and is coming to Netflix in 2021. When a mysterious stranger from the future arrives with a dire warning, Leonardo must lead his brothers in a fight to save the world from a terrifying alien species, the Krang. Look, I don't know if you guys are big TMNT fans. I am personally a big TMNT fan, and I know a lot of people don't like Teen Titans Go. I don't either, but Rise of TMNT is the Teen Titans Go of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles universe. It's such a lame show. It's not funny. It's trying really hard to be. And it's not as good as the show that came before, which was a perfect rendition of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So the fact that they're doing a movie for this version gets me kind of upset. They should make a movie for the other version. Way better. Also, the Krang, that storyline was established and went through in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2012, the one that I like. Ben Affleck is set to direct Keeper of the Lost Cities, based on the book, for Disney. I'm always happy to see Ben Affleck getting more work. Now that he's out of rehab, he's a great director. Excited to see it. Andy Samberg is set to star in a sci-fi comedy drama at Apple Studios with Palm Springs writer Andy Ciara attached, so they're working together again. And it's based from an idea from the creator of BoJack Horseman, a fantastic mind. So I just really loved Palm Springs. There's not a lot of more information on this one, but if it's a sci-fi comedy with Andy Samberg and the writer of Palm Springs, I'm sure it's going to be good. Brendan Fraser will star in Darren Aronofsky's The Whale, based on the award-winning play. The Whale revolves around a 600-pound man trying to reconnect with his 17-year-old daughter. Now, usually I wouldn't talk about this either. I'm just a huge fan of Brendan Fraser, and he has gone through a lot in his life. Very happy to see him getting more work. He's great on Doom Patrol, if you haven't seen it. It's a great DC show. And Brendan Fraser is fantastic on it. He plays Robot Man, which is a pretty fun role for him. Nicole Kidman and Javier Bardem are in talks to play Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, the stars of I Love Lucy, in a film written and directed by Aaron Sorkin called Being the Ricardos. Big fan of I Love Lucy. I used to watch it with my grandma, with my mom. I actually just showed my grandma that there's episodes on Hulu. She's very excited about that. So when I saw this news, I thought it was pretty cool. And I like Javier Bardem. Love Nicole Kidman. I'm sure it's going to be great. Now let's move on to TV news. Loki Season 2 is already in development from Marvel Studios and creator Michael Warden. That's fantastic. The trailer dropped and I think everyone went crazy over it. Green Arrow and the Canaries, a spinoff of the long-running CW show Arrow, has officially not been picked up by the CW. This show had a backdoor spinoff episode in the final season of Arrow. It was going to revolve around his daughter, who was set up in the whole last season of Arrow. She came on, she took over the role of Green Arrow, unlike the comics where it's Connor Hawk, which was established in the Arrow universe already that Connor Hawk was going to be the next Green Arrow, but they took it away from him and they gave it to her. Not a big deal. She was fine. She was cool. She was in Crisis on Infinite Earths. I didn't have a problem with her. I didn't think the show had enough footing to have a spin-off, but they were really pushing it. They had both of the Black Canaries from the original show to come on. They were gonna help her out and like teach her how to be a hero again. It was gonna be set in the future. There was a version of Deathstroke. There was a whole bunch of stuff which it sounds way cooler on paper, but in practice it didn't fit well. So I'm not surprised by this, although I am a little curious as to what they were going for with this show. But it's a shame it did not get picked up. Actor Josh Keaton has responded to the Save Spectacular Spider-Man campaign by dressing up as Spider-Man and creating a video thanking everyone for their support. Now, if you've seen a couple of my episodes, you know that I love the Spectacular Spider-Man. It's my favorite Spider-Man cartoon. It's the cartoon that got me into Spider-Man and into the Marvel Universe, I'd say, if any of them. Josh Keaton is fantastic in the role, and so the fact that he did a video thanking everyone after 10 years of the show being canceled, it's fantastic. I really hope they bring the show back. I'm sure it would be a big draw on Disney Plus. Marvel, Disney, if you're listening, go do it. They set up a bunch of stuff for season 3. They set up the Hobgoblin, they set up Hydro Man, they set up Carnage, they set up the death of Gwen Stacy, but they never got to finish it, which really sucks because they ended up doing Ultimate Spider-Man, which is not as good. But yeah, Save Spectacular Spider-Man, absolutely. Please do it. Umbrella Academy has casted Justin Cornwell, Brittany Oldford, Jake Epstein, and Genesis Rodriguez as the Sparrow Academy. That's right, the whole Sparrow Academy has been assembled now. Of course, Ben is also a part of the team, and it also seems to be some cube-like powerful thing. I don't know. You can see all the pictures on our page at Live Action Remake. There seems to be some cube that has a bunch of power that's also a part of the team. I'm sure it'll be voiced by someone eventually. Are you excited about any of these actors? Let me know. I don't really know any of them, so. Crossbones actor Frank Grillo has confirmed his character will return in Marvel's What If. Love Crossbones. He was a great part of Civil War, even though he was just a small part. Excited to see Frank Grillo come back. And I hope he's got a multi-episode arc, but I don't think he will. Emma Caulfield, known for her role as Anya Jenkins on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, has been cast in WandaVision. This is interesting. Although her role is not set, it's interesting that they're going to actors who are well-established in different sitcoms. Like, they're getting the mom from That 70s Show, and now they're getting her from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I wonder where they're going with all this. Leslie DeLeese also was cast as we don't know yet. But she was Daphne in the old animated cartoons of the Scooby-Doo, so I'm thinking maybe they're gonna do an animated episode, maybe they're gonna do a Buffy the Vampire style episode. I don't know. There's 9 episodes, so there's a lot of room for them to do whatever they want. I'm pretty excited. The next big villain on Batwoman has been revealed to be Black Mask. Though an actor has not been confirmed, it is confirmed he will be the main villain of season 2. Black Mask is a great character. I'm glad to see that he's coming into the Arrowverse. Ewan McGregor did a great job of him in Birds of Prey. You may have seen that movie. I am excited to see what they do with him and how he fits into the larger Arrowverse. I would like them to see more villain team-ups in the Arrowverse because there are so many, and there are a lot of interconnected villains like Lex Luthor and like Black Mask who are really deep in crime. I think that they could have a couple of cool team-ups, but we'll see what happens. Sex and the City is set to return with an HBO revival. Sarah Jessica Parker, Cynthia Nixon, and Kristen Davis are returning. It is entitled Just Like That. It will be 10 episodes, and each episode will be a half an hour long. Now, my mom really loves Sex and the City. That's the only reason why I know a lot about this, to be honest. I've seen the movies. They're fine. I think the show is fine, but a lot of people are very excited. Let me know if you're a big fan of Sex and the City. The Willow series for Disney Plus has lost its director, John M. Chu, due to production schedules shifting in the UK due to lockdowns. That sucks. You know, I wasn't probably going to watch The Willows unless the trailer really blew my mind, but John M. Chu is a great director. He's got a great visual style, so I was excited to see what he was going to do with it, but now that he's gone, I don't know what they're going to do. And that's all the TV news I had and movie news I had. But there's one other thing I wanted to bring up. I don't know, it's not TV or movie related, it's actually comic related, but I just had to talk about this. Miles Morales will be getting his own Spider-Man Clone Saga this April. Now, if you don't know about the Spider-Man Clone Saga, it's one of the most ridiculous, weird, sometimes most hated comic book storylines in Spider-Man's history. There were several different Spider-Man. There was this idea that maybe Peter wasn't the original Spider-Man, maybe he was a clone. A lot of different hijinks happen. It's pretty stupid and funny, and some would argue as weird as comics get, which is not inherently bad, but it's really interesting that they decided that they're going to give Miles Morales his very own Clone Saga. It's coming out in April this year. You may have also seen it on the Spider-Man animated series. They did a similar Clone Saga style couple of episodes. Yeah, I'm shocked that they would even announce this or do this at all. I think Miles Morales doesn't need it, or doesn't need to do another storyline that Peter Parker has already done, but I am still interested because I love Miles Morales, and I'd like to see what the Miles Morales twist on the Clone Saga is. But so let me know what you guys think of the Clone Saga. Let me know, are you interested in the new Willow series? Are you interested in Sex in the City? The Umbrella Academy's version of the Sparrow Academy, Loki Season 2 being the Ricardos, Rise of the TMNT. Let me know what you think. Email me at liveactionremakepodcast@gmail.com. Now it's on a rewatch, where I rewatch a movie to get you ready for the next big thing in media, the next big thing being WandaVision. That's right, WandaVision comes out this Friday. So we are on the last film in Scarlet Witch and Vision's journey. That is Endgame. Now, this is the only film that only has one of those two characters. As you know, at the end of Avengers Infinity War, Vision actually dies, so Scarlet Witch, although she also dies, comes in this film at the very end when everyone is brought back to life. So this is the end of Scarlet Witch's story right before WandaVision, so it's really exciting. We just ended right before we are about to see WandaVision this Friday. So why don't I get into what I really don't like about this film, given that there's a lot less than compared to what I like about it. Starting with the underutilized characters, there are two in particular. One that was very hyped up in the marketing of this film, and that's Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel, Brie Larson, she only filmed a few scenes for this movie. She actually filmed this movie before her movie, Captain Marvel, but she's underutilized, and the character really doesn't develop in this film at all. She's really off-screen and just comes down to destroy a ship and have a really cool she's got help moment, which I will talk about a little bit more later in depth. But I was disheartened that Brie Larson was not in more of this film. I was excited to learn more about her and how she works with the team, but we really don't get to see that in this film. The other character I was even more sad to see we didn't get a lot of was Valkyrie, who ended up being one of my favorite characters in Thor Ragnarok. We didn't get her at all in Infinity War, so I figured, okay, this is the movie where we get more Valkyrie. She's going to be a really integral part of the team in the same way that Hawkeye and Ant-Man went in the last movie, so she's going to be a big part of this movie. She wasn't. She really wasn't. She is sidelined as well, and the Avengers really go and get Thor in order to find someone who knows Asgard very well, but Valkyrie is more well-equipped and in a better headspace to do that, and they end up sidelining her in order to get Thor onto the team, probably just because Chris Hemsworth. But it's still sad. I think Tessa Thompson was wasted in this movie, and I'm excited to see more of her in Thor: Love and Thunder. There are scenes in this movie that I don't particularly like, including there is a scene where Ant-Man does a time travel test with Hulk, Captain America, and Black Widow, and Ant-Man like turns into a baby and an old man and a kid. Not my cup of tea. I didn't end up laughing. I know a lot of people did, but it was just maybe a little nitpicky, but it's not my favorite scene. When I was thinking about Avengers Endgame, I also thought that there was a scene that needed to be in the film that wasn't, and that is the resolution of Winter Soldier and Iron Man's feud. Iron Man wanted to kill Bucky, and we never get to see him fight alongside him, even though they are on the same side of the fight at the end of the movie. I was thinking there would be a scene where maybe Bucky saves Iron Man from a couple of people real quick, and they just kind of nod and then go their separate ways, having an understanding at least. I don't need them to be best friends. I would have liked some resolution to that feud. Because if there's no resolution, when Iron Man snaps, he could have snapped Bucky away too, but he doesn't. So I want to know why. Like, are they okay? Are they not? I just want to know a little bit more about their relationship now. A lot of people don't like Hawkeye's hair. I actually don't mind it. I don't like his tattoo though. I think that's a little over the line for Hawkeye, particularly. I think he's trying really hard with the mohawk, and I'll give him that, but a tattoo as well, it doesn't fit Jeremy Renner to me, so I think he looks a little goofy with that. The time heist itself, although has a lot of fun, and it's a lot of fun, and they obviously go to certain points so that way you remember the Avengers, and that way Tony has a resolution with his father, and you know, Thor has a resolution with his mother, but I think the time heist could have been a lot more concise. I actually did a video on my Twitter at Action Remake Pod about a much more condensed, easier time heist that would have had way less problems than their time heist does. I don't like the spin-off scene where Loki gets the Tesseract. It's a little goofy on a rewatch. At the time, I was like, oh, they're gonna do the Loki show, but now I'm like, ah, that looks kind of weird. But I'm excited for the Loki show, so it's fine. Okay, this is a nitpick, not for this movie necessarily, but more for Thor: The Dark World. Rocket has a machine that just takes the ether right out of Jane. In Thor: The Dark World, the biggest problem that they have is how are they going to get the ether out of Jane? And if they have that device in the galaxy, and the Asgardians are a technologically advanced civilization, why don't they have the technology to take it out either? If Rocket can do it, I feel like there's someone on Asgard who could probably do it. And finally, the Thor, Iron Man, and Cap fight I really love. I think they excluded Hulk. I don't think that was cool. I think Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk is just an important core member of the Avengers in those three. I think the four of them fighting Thanos together, especially because he has one arm, and he'd be a little bit, I wouldn't say useless, but like less useful. It would have still been a good fight, and Thanos would have still had an upper hand on every character. So they still would have lost. It would have been a good fight, though, and I think Hulk deserved to be in that fight with Thor, Cap, and Iron Man. Now let's get into what I really like about this film, which there is a lot to love about this film, to be honest. Visually, it's a beautiful film. There are shots from space that look incredible. There is the whole ending fight scene. The CGI looks amazing. I can't think of a shot that looks particularly bad. There are great scenes in this film that are not just action scenes. Like, in the beginning of the film, Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark is basically malnourished, and he's angry, and he's just going off on Captain America. And he says, you know, we lost, and you weren't there. You said that you'd be there. Like, you're a liar, you go, you hide, you do this, and he's just going in on him. And there are a lot of scenes in this movie, but that one in particular, that makes up for Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron sets up a lot of really important and key scenes in this film, and they pay off. And I'll get into more of them later. I also like, and I learned this from the Avengers Endgame commentary, which I really love, and I recommend you guys check out if you have the Blu-ray. The first Avengers scene where all of them are together, and they're talking about what they're going to do next, and Captain Marvel's like, oh, I could just go kill him, and they're all talking. Every character in that scene, or at least most of them, it sets their path for the next 5 years. If you look, Thor is actually eating and drinking at the time, showing that he's coping with his stress through eating and drinking. We also see that Captain America and Black Widow are already on, what's the next thing we're going to do? We're on the mission. We got to be on the mission. And as we see in 5 years, they are still on the mission. They're still like, we still need to do this. And they're the only two that are still like that. Bruce actually goes, well, how are we going to do things differently? Who else is not going to work? It's just going to be the same thing as last time. And so in 5 years, Bruce has done something drastically different. So that way, if anything happens again, he will be more prepared. That's exactly what he does. We see Rocket and Nebula talking about space. They go back to space. Every character has that one line or dialogue that sets them up for the next 5 years. And as you see, Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark is away from the whole group because he has isolated himself from everything after those 5 years. So I thought that was really cool and a really smart thing to plant the seeds of where they're going to go next. I love that this movie is really a character study of a lot of the Avengers. I love scenes like You Gotta Move On with Captain America and he's in the group therapy with all those people. It really shows how inspiring Captain America can be, but it also shows the acting range of Chris Evans, who is clearly saying things that he does not believe. And it's apparent in his eyes and in his voice, but he's trying really hard to believe them. Ant-Man's return, and basically Ant-Man in general, is great in this film. I love Paul Rudd. I talked about him quite a bit on Civil War. In this movie in particular, we get to see a little more of his range as well, particularly when he comes back and sees his daughter. That is the first scene in the movie that actually makes me cry. And it still does to this day because both of them, even though it's a non-verbal scene, it's definitely a great example of show, don't tell, of everything that's processing in their minds. It's great. I love that scene. It's beautifully shot. The music's great. Love it. I also like that even though they introduce a weird concept like time travel, they introduce it through something that we already know, that's already been established, and that is the quantum realm, which we've been talking about since 2015, has an excellent idea. It could have been easily Hulk being like, hey, I think I figured out time travel. And that could have been really dumb and not as thought out. This one makes more sense to me. So I like that Ant-Man comes in and he's the X factor that goes, what if we use time travel? I like that there are characters like Tony and Bruce who have actually, you know, had good lives after these 5 years. Tony's is at the best that he's ever been, and so is Bruce. They've been very stressed for most of their life. At the end of these 5 years, they're in the best spots ever. So I appreciate that not everyone is having the worst time ever. There are characters I also appreciate, like Thor and Hawkeye, who are also, they are having the worst time ever. And it shows that not everyone's going to react the same way to this extinction-level event. It's going to be different, and that's how life would really be. I like Morgan. I think she's cute, used in small doses, and she hits that emotional spot later in the film when, you know, Tony dies, like you see her and they set it up enough where you're sad at the end. So I appreciate her. I like Tony's line about how I got my second chance. I can't roll the dice on it. It makes sense. There are often times when in film the character's like, I can't do that. I'm retired. And it feels kind of forced. This one makes a lot of sense. Tony has a daughter now. He's done with that life. He tried for the longest to protect the world, and he couldn't, and now he's just done. I think that's good character development for him. I like that line a lot. Professor Hulk, I talked about a little bit. It's my favorite version of the Hulk. To me, it's the definitive version of the Hulk. I think Mark Ruffalo really is having a good time finally getting to play superhero in a way that isn't just a roaring monster. And I like that he's somewhere in between Bruce and the Hulk. He's not just Bruce Banner, but a Hulk. He's more confident. He's a little bit more irritable. And he is definitely more entitled. And I appreciate that Mark Ruffalo isn't just doing more Banner. He's doing something in between. And I like that. I appreciate that. Certain characters get upgrades and better looks. My favorites are Rocket Raccoon, who has more of a, like, the scarf of Star-Lord, but it looks more like his comic book version, so I appreciate that. Ronan, who is way cooler looking in the costume, not when he takes off the sleeves and you see the tattoo, but he's cool in the costume. It's the best Hawkeye look by far. And finally, War Machine's suit at the end, which is a callback to the Iron Patriot from Iron Man 3. I love that it's much bigger. Oh, it's more of a tank. I hope they keep that suit for Armor Wars or something very similar to it. It was cool. Now, Thor. If you asked me to review this movie right after I saw it, I would say that Thor would be one of my least favorite parts of the movie, because Thor is used a lot for comedic relief, and I think it was very smart on the marketing not to put him like that. It was definitely a twist that no one saw coming, that Thor would be this, like, big, fat, drunk, depressed god. It's a different look for the character, especially after what we just saw in the last two movies of Thor Ragnarok and Avengers Infinity War. We just got him to be the most powerful he's ever been, and now he's at the lowest he's ever been. On the rewatches, because I've rewatched this movie several times, I begin to appreciate Thor a lot more. It shows how depression really looks. And yes, they use comedy a lot. I think maybe a little bit too much with Thor in this movie, but it makes sense why he would be depressed after all this. He's lost more than just about anyone in the MCU. And it also has a nice message that being depressed and, you know, going to the lowest point in your life doesn't make you unworthy. He's still able to hold the hammer, which was a really nice message. I appreciated that, and I think it was a good uplifting message for people with depression. That was awesome. I like Hawkeye's, like, revenge anger that he's just killing anyone who has lived that he doesn't believe deserved it. I kind of think it would be a little bit funnier if Hawkeye and Thor had different arcs. Like, we see Ultimate Thor, where he's just killing anyone and slaughtering people in Tokyo. And then we see fat, drunk Hawkeye. I think that could have been pretty funny. But what ended up happening was pretty cool, too. I like that this movie makes fun of Dark World. I love when these movies make fun of Dark World. It's not a great film. Thor's whole rant about the sludge of the ether and Jane Foster being an old flame. That was funny. I appreciate that. The Avengers white suits are pretty cool. I have a hoodie that's made that looks like the Avengers white suit. It's a cool design. I like it. I wish it wasn't CGI, but, you know, can't win them all. A couple of fights I really like in this movie. Cap versus Cap is probably the first one that I really love. It's a ridiculous time travel idea. I never thought I would see Captain America fighting Captain America, but it was a lot of fun. And it made sense because Loki pretended to be Captain America in the scene before. So it, like, he's like, oh, of course he would think it was Loki. Now they got to fight. That was set up perfectly. I appreciate that. I like the Hawkeye-Black Widow fight. If I have to be nitpicky about it, I think if anyone thought that Hawkeye was going to win, they're stupid, because Hawkeye has fought Black Widow like 3 times and he always loses. He's never won once. Why would he win in a life or death situation? I love when Thor sees his mother. I think that's an awesome scene. I think there's a lot of character development in that scene, and we get to put him on a path where we're going to see Thor not having to be king. He has to be whatever he wants to be, which is cool. I think this scene could have easily been Thor seeing his father and getting wisdom from his father, and it would have just been him being like, oh, you're strong, you're a good man, you could be a good king, it's all okay. But instead he sees his mother, who tells him what he needs to hear. I didn't need to see more Odin. Odin always talks to Thor. I loved that Thor got to see his mother and had a little bit of closure on that. That was what he needed in the moment, and it was fantastic. Nebula is great in this film as well. Nebula having to face her past, literally seeing her past self, awesome. I love the interaction between evil Nebula and new Nebula. This is a small thing, but I like when they bring back characters. I like Tilda Swinton. I like seeing Alexander Pierce. I like seeing Howard Stark. And for those who don't know, Edwin Jarvis was also in this, and that kind of gives a reward to anyone who saw Agent Carter, which is me. I like that. There is also a scene right when they're about to snap. They're talking about who should get the gauntlet to snap. Thor wants to, but Hulk decides that it should be him. And he says that the radiation is mostly gamma. It's like I was made for this. Which goes back to the original Avengers film, when Tony tells Bruce that the amount of gamma radiation should have killed him, and that it maybe have saved him for something. And I like that it comes full circle, and Bruce acknowledges that it's coming full circle, that this is why I survived, because I need to do this, I need to bring everyone back. I love that. I love when they bring things full circle. That was great. This movie really rewards you if you've seen all the Avengers movies and all of the Marvel movies. There are so many callbacks to great jokes. There's callbacks to Star-Lord singing on his way to get the orb. There's callbacks to Spider-Man Homecoming, Instant Kill, which is probably my favorite joke. On Your Left, that's a side joke that's great. And they show all the armies from different movies. So if the Ravagers, you get to see the Wizards, you get to see everybody, Asgard, Wakanda. If you've seen any of those movies, you get to see how grand the Avengers world is and how they inspire, which is awesome. I talked about it a little bit, but I love the Thor, Iron Man, and Cap fight, particularly for the reveal that, spoilers, Captain America gets to hold Thor's hammer. One of the most amazing scenes in my lifetime. I think I flipped my shit when I saw that, not gonna lie. In theaters, I was clapping. I was like, oh my god, what am I seeing? Side note, if you ever are going to see an Avengers film, delete Facebook and YouTube a week before. That's what I always do, so that way you don't get spoilers. It's a good note to have. And of course, the big battle scene. I know a lot of people don't like it. I personally really enjoy the She's Got Help moment. I think it was really cool to see all the female Avengers together. And it was a way to acknowledge that even though Black Widow has died, that a lot of female superheroes are still going to carry on her legacy, that she's not the only one. I think a lot of people might have felt that way maybe when Black Widow died, like, oh wow, just we lost another female superhero. And it was like, no, we have plenty, and we're going to have more in the future. I think that's the message that Marvel was trying to send. Maybe I'm an optimist, but that's how I read it. So I really enjoyed that scene. Finally, of course, we have to get to Robert Downey Jr.'s death, Tony Stark's death in the film. I think it was fantastic if you compare it to movies like Logan, where we see a character like Hugh Jackman's Wolverine die. It hits the same to me. They're both pretty emotional. What I like about this one is that we also bring it full circle. The I Am Iron Man. That's how we started this universe. That's how he's going to end in this universe. That was fantastic. The reactions of other heroes, instead of we see Tony saying his last words. We don't need Tony to say his last words. He already did. We get to see the reactions of Rescue and Captain America and Thor and Spider-Man and War Machine, all of these key characters who were very close to Tony. We get to see how his impact on them is, and I appreciate that. The funeral, just a wide pan of all of them together, fantastic shot, really hits home. And then when you see Harley, I think I cried the hardest when I saw Harley. So I was like, man, he's really, really affecting lives from so long ago that still remember him. And I thought that was such a cool callback, and of course they would invite him. He had such a connection with Tony. I loved it. I loved the movie. And then, if the movie couldn't hit you with enough emotional punches, we get to the ending where Captain America goes to the past, and he gets to live his life with Peggy. Now, does that feel weird later on when you find out that he, like, kind of kissed his niece? Kind of, yeah, that's weird. I didn't like that. But in the moment, it's exactly what Chris Evans as Captain America deserved. He has been selfless throughout this whole time, and he's finally learning to be selfish and get what he deserves in the end, which is, it's fine. It's okay to want to take care of yourself sometimes. Tony was completely selfish, and he went on to be selfless. They both inspired each other to be a good middle ground, I think. So I'm glad that they both got the endings that they were inevitably supposed to get, you know? I had a theory very similar to Captain America going to the past, but I thought he was going to be stuck in the past in order to warn them of Thanos, but it was obviously didn't go that way. That's not how time travel works in this movie. So, and of course, the decision to give Sam Wilson the shield, I love a lot. Now, a lot of people prefer Bucky, and for a lot of reasons, I understand. He was with Captain America the longest. He had the most important relationship to Captain America in the movies. And he's a super soldier, so he's everything that Captain America should be, right? Well, you're wrong. Here's why. Captain America isn't about being a super soldier. It's not about being a World War veteran. It's about being a good man. And Sam Wilson is a good man. Bucky, despite him wanting to be a good man, he'll always be a little bit scarred. And he'll always be a little bit dark and with a little bit of trauma. And it just isn't what Captain America is. It's not his fault, but it's just he can't be Captain America. Sam Wilson can be. He is the good man. Often he's the moral compass for Captain America anyway, so I think it was a great decision. Also, there's a quote from the Russo brothers saying that Captain America is supposed to be what America can be in theory. Bucky is what America is right now, kind of. So he isn't something that you want to become. He's something that America already is. He's a little bit gray. So we need someone who is a good man. Sam Wilson was the excellent choice. I'm glad that Marvel doubled down on the black guy. That's awesome. I love when they give people of color big roles, and so I'm very happy about that, and I'm excited for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But yeah, overall, I love this film. It hits me emotionally every time. It's a long movie, but it never feels its length. It's a character study and a big blockbuster film. It is the perfect MCU movie, in my opinion, and I can't wait for the next Avengers film in like 5, 7 years, who knows. But yeah, let me know what you guys think. Are you guys big fans of Avengers Endgame? Let me know. Are you going to be watching WandaVision this week? Let me know. I'm so excited. Now on to my recommendation for the week. This week, WandaVision finally comes out. I'm so excited to see it, you guys. So I'm actually going to give you more recommendations as to what to watch, read, in order to get you excited for WandaVision. As I've gone through, you could watch all the Avengers movies and Captain America: Civil War to get you excited, because that will show you the whole story of Wanda and Vision. That is definitely what you need to watch in order to get the full gist of the story. If you want to skip that and you just want the little details of what their story is, just the main points, Disney Plus actually came up with a series called Marvel Legends. The first two episodes are already on Disney Plus, and they're just about Wanda and Vision, and it's just 7 minutes of everything that happens to them in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a great recap if you don't want to watch all the movies. It's just a good idea of what the characters have gone through if you have never seen any of the movies, so check that out if you want just a quick refresher. If you want to go deep into the characters that are the side characters in the show WandaVision, there are a couple that show up in the MCU, not in the Avengers movies, like Randall Park's Jimmy Woo. He showed up in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He's going to be in WandaVision. I'm very excited to see him again. So if you want to see him before WandaVision, check out Ant-Man and the Wasp. He plays a side character, but he's a very fun character. There's also the character of Darcy Lewis, who was a side character in Thor and Thor: The Dark World. You can see her in those two movies before WandaVision. There's been like a 10-year gap since we've seen her. So it's kind of interesting that they're bringing her back in this big way. And finally, you can check out Captain Marvel. So you could see Monica Rambeau as a child. You could see how she grew up with Carol and how that's kind of like her auntie. Maybe more. It's a good way to see who she was before WandaVision. We're seeing her now as an adult, but that's really the beginning of her story. So if you want to see the beginning of Monica Rambeau's story, who appears to be the biggest character of the three, check out Captain Marvel. And she will also appear in Captain Marvel 2, so it's good to know where she started before going into WandaVision and then watching WandaVision to get you ready for Captain Marvel 2. So check out that movie, definitely. And if you want to read some comics to get you excited for WandaVision, I highly recommend Tom King's The Vision. I can't stop talking about it. I may have gone into it on this show, or it might have been a paper that I wrote, I don't remember. But it's a fantastic comic book about how Vision is trying to build the ideal suburban life for himself and build a family. It's very dark. With no humans in it, it happens to say some of the most interesting ideas about humanity and what it means to be a person and alive. Highly recommend it. It's great writing. It's a nice visual style. Check it out. Or you could check out House of M, another great comic book. It's about the Avengers. It's a little bit of a bigger, higher stakes comic. It's about how Wanda is starting to lose control of her powers and changing reality. Many people believe this is going to be a heavy influence on the show. So I'm not going to spoil too much more of that comic. It's very good. But check it out. Check out House of M. Check out The Vision, both those comic books. They're fantastic. And that's all I really had for you guys this week. Are you excited for WandaVision the way that I am? I'm so pumped for WandaVision. I've waited since July 2019 for new MCU content. It's finally around the corner. I'm so pumped. Let me know. And let me know if you were excited about any news. Did I miss anything? Do you have any recommendations for me? Please email me at liveactionremakepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you heard, feel free to recommend it to a friend. Feel free to like us on Facebook and Instagram at Live Action Remake. You can also tweet me on Twitter at Action Remake Pod. So please do so. Ask me questions. I'd love to hear from y'all. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have a great week. I hope you guys watch WandaVision. We'll be doing a review for that next week, the first two episodes. I'm so excited, guys. Have a good one. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Do what you love. I'm signing out.